The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things. Hello. Welcome to Exposing the Masters Within, the one and only hour on radio or the internet dedicated solely to helping you expose yourself. My name is John Schulte. I'm here to serve you, to help you to know more of the truth about you. It's often said, looks can be deceiving. And we all know that the surface of things is, by definition, shallow. So thanks for joining me today as we journey through the looking glass to explore what's on the other side, to explore what's beneath the surface. We're here together to discover, uncover, and recover our masters within. You knew your mastery much more fully when you signed up for your on-earth sojourn. But you mostly forgot it soon after leaving the cozy confines of your mother's womb. You've rediscovered some inkling of it, or you wouldn't be listening to me now. So, it's time to remember the masters we are. It's time to reclaim the power we have. It's time for Exposing the Masters Within. Let's get started.
Today is September 11th, 2011. And it is 10 years, I think. I don't follow the news that well. That's what my memory tells me. It's 10 years since the planes and the towers and all of that happened. And for me, 10 is a number of new beginnings. 9 is completion. We finish things up. We wrap them up. 10 is we get to start over again. And so although I'm going to use 9-11, which has a whole new meaning since that date for so many of us, I'm going to use 9-11 as a jumping off point for where we're going today. But it's not going to be the primary focus. And I'm happy that you're here with me. Whether you're here live or whether you're listening to the recording is irrelevant. You're helping me to co-create this. And so, as usual, let's begin with connecting, getting those connections open so we can receive what we need, what we desire, what we are ready for. So the first connection is within, opening up to your own master within you, your own divinity, your own light, your own soul or oversoul. Terms are irrelevant here. This is about you with a capital Y. This is about self with a capital S. And just let yourself breathe into you and let yourself expand. Wonderful. Feels good. And then the next place to go is to connect with our Mother Earth. She allows us to have the experience of the physical dimension, to be present here at this time of transition, at this time of opportunity. And she gives us ongoing love and support. And so just allow yourself to breathe her presence in, her love, her support. Let her fill you up and fill the space around you to act as a cushion when dealing with the rest of the world. And let's expand that support out yet again. Opening up to the connection with the Ascended Masters, the angels, the teachers, the spirit guides, those beings who are not in body right now, who are not down here in the physical, but who are here with us, supporting us as we live our life, as we walk on this spiritual path and move forward toward our power. Into our power. And so breathe in and let yourself feel that support as fully as you're able in this moment. So now let's expand out once again. And this time, make the connection to the community who are here co-creating this show today. Everyone listening live, everyone listening to the recording, you are co-creating this with me. We are an energy together that is shaping this moment, shaping what comes out of my mouth, shaping what we share today. So allow yourself to breathe that presence in as consciously as possible. We are here, we are in it together, and we are moving forward together. Wonderful. And let's expand that yet again out to all those who are walking a spiritual path, a path of conscious awakening, a path of self-discovery and self-exposure, of sharing that mastery, that divinity that we are more fully in the world, and of seeking to recognize it and support the expression of the divinity in all those we come in contact with. Let's breathe into and connect with that larger community of light workers, of light bringers, of light awakeners. Beautiful. And thank you. And so we step forward, and the theme for today, if there is such a word, at least at the beginning, the theme is support. And what we just did was connected with support from within ourselves, our own divinity, out to the earth, out to our guides and angels, out to this community, out to the other light workers. And yet, support is not necessarily an easy thing to receive, because it's not an easy thing to ask for. And this goes back to the root issue that we all have here, to whatever degree we have it in this moment, but the root issue that is the root of all issues, which is, as we've spoken of before, that we don't remember experientially our divinity. So we don't remember experientially our value, and so we get caught to a degree in those patterns of seeking our value. And in seeking our value, one of the things that is especially prevalent in the West and in the United States in particular is the idea of self-sufficiency. That we need to do it ourselves. And part of that is one way, one pattern of attempting to discover our own value. If I can do it for myself, then I can take pride in that. I can step into a degree of feeling like I've accomplished something. And there is something to that. But, and this is, again, my truth as everything I share on the show is, so, you know, use your discernment, but it's never enough. Nothing that we do is ever going to get us to know our true and complete value, because our true value is not about doing anything. And so as long as that equation is operating, that our value is based upon someone else acknowledging what we've done, or us acknowledging what we've done, we are never going to get there to that true, full knowing of our mastery, of our worth, of our value, etc. Now, that's not to say we're not here to do. What it is to say is that's putting the equation backwards. The more we know our value, the more we will actually give out of value into the world. Rather than the more we put out into the world, the more we will come to know our value. And as I said, I was going to use 9/11 in the towers and all of that as a jumping off point. And so here we go. Here we go. Let's jump off. What I want to bring that up for is that, and again, some people may hear this in a way that I don't intend it, but since World War II especially, the United States has been, in many ways, fairly arrogant, and we don't look for help as a country. Now, that's not the individuals in the country, that's the government policy, so to speak, but we the people elected those officials, and so there's a degree to which it's in our mass consciousness, and we have very much that self-reliance, and we are willing to stand alone, and often, and indeed even more often, more recently, we do as a country stand alone. We don't ask for support. Often the only support, or at times at least, the only support that we have as a country is Great Britain. They're the truest ally, so to speak. But what happened at 9/11 was so horrific in terms of how people perceived it, in terms of one of the things that it did for much of the world, but especially in the West, was it shattered illusions about security. Now, lots of people in the rest of the world don't have the same illusions about security that we had before 9/11 because they don't live in the kind of affluence that we tend to live in. And so it wasn't quite as shattering for them. But what happened as a result of 9/11, as a result of that suffering, was this outpouring of support that came almost universally across the planet. Certainly not every country or every head of state was involved, but it was even surprising. But look at the pattern. Look at the pattern. As a country, we had to go through something that was devastating in order to really take a step back and open up to be supported by everyone else. And the reason I'm wanting to use this as a jumping off point here today is that I believe there's a degree of that pattern in most of us, whether we live here in this country or not. There is a degree of needing it to be, needing our situation, needing our circumstance, needing our life to really hit, again, I've talked about before, to hit rock bottom, as I think they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, to hit rock bottom, to hit such a low point before we will be willing to really step up and ask for help. Because that asking for help bumps up against our need to prove our value. If we ask for help, then there's something wrong with us. Then we're not valuable. So the very equation of asking for help tells us our unworthiness, which we're trying to escape by doing it ourselves. And I believe that this pattern gets us, if not into all kinds of trouble, because if we were willing to ask for help before it got to that level of crap, we wouldn't have to go to that level of crap to be triggered to ask for help. So in some ways, yes, we have these worst experiences in our lives to a degree because we need that incentive to overcome our resistance that comes with the program that says to ask for help is a sign of weakness. To ask for help, if it is a sign of weakness, is also a sign of negative value. And we don't want to go there. Now, Take a deep breath. I'd like to talk about how we can get past this, because it's a seeming, on the surface of it, catch 22, for those of you who know that term, where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, kind of. We, in asking for help, are going to trigger our unworthiness because we feel weak. If we don't ask for help, then we're stuck out there on our own. We're not getting the support. We're not allowing the support in that is available. Now, one thing that I find interesting is that in the entire time that I've been doing channeling, so 14 years now, 14 and a half years, one thing that consistently comes back around, I've heard it with so many different clients in so many groups, the masters, the angels are wanting us to ask them for help. We don't ask enough. Again, I think it's part of that equation. But at least at least they're not in body. They're not sitting here within these same patterns that we are, where if somebody asks us for help, we might go into some judgment about that. What's wrong with them that they can't handle that themselves? Our angels, our guides, are not sitting in those patterns with us. And so they are not going to throw judgment at us. We're not going to get a negative attitude coming back at us from them if we ask them for help. At least I don't believe that would ever happen. Certainly, for instance, even though it's not specifically asking for help at the beginning of the shows, when I have all of us connect into those different levels, it is asking for help. It's opening to feel that support. It's opening to feel that connection. That is help. That is to help us overcome one of the primary experiences down here, being in human form, the experience of loneliness, the experience of being alone walking this path. And part of that is we're in a body. And right now on the planet, it is not the pattern that we are living in unity consciousness with each other. And so we are, to a degree, cut off from each other. We are, to a degree, walking this path alone. But we're not, because our Mother Earth is always there, because our own divinity is always there. And yes, we are our divinity, but at the same time, the very issue that we have is that we don't experience that all the time. So every time we consciously choose to just open to our divinity, it's like we're receiving support from outside ourselves, because it's outside of our normal experience, our everyday experience, to know our divinity, to feel our power more fully. And there's always room for more. That's another one of the phrases I love that I've channeled frequently. There's always room for more. Some people say it can always get worse, and yes, there are degrees that it can. I can say it can always get better. No matter how good it is, there's always room for more. We can always have more love, more joy, more laughter, more play, more freedom, more. And indeed, from our divine place, from our divine perspective, from our divine value, we deserve that. We deserve that more, that experience of better than before. And so, I don't believe, I certainly haven't gotten any feedback, and I've received a lot of feedback from you guys, which I'm always grateful for, about the shows. I've never yet had someone write to me and say, you know, when we tuned into and connected with our angels, I got this negative message back saying, we're busy, call back later. Why are you bothering me? Because they're not going to do that, which is where I was a moment ago, coming back around. And we're not going to receive that from our own divinity. And we're not going to receive that from the Mother Earth. And we're not going to receive that from the rest of the people in this community connecting through this show. Everyone is opening to the degree that they can. But again, it's not about receiving at the expense of someone else. So there's no one reaching into this group going, ooh, I'll take all the money. I'll take all the energy. I'll take all the good stuff. I'll take everything as you're offering, and I'm not opening to give anything back. That's not this community. And the same with the light workers at the energetic level. It's about opening up to the degree that is safe. I wouldn't want anyone to open beyond that degree to receive or to give. We have to take care of ourselves in that way. But these are places, these are connections that we can choose to open up into outside of the show, regularly, daily, more frequently than that even, to remind ourselves of these connections, to remind ourselves of the support, to remind ourselves of the availability of that support, of that help, and to begin to step into asking for what we need more frequently. And by stepping into the pattern of asking for what we need more frequently, of spirit at whatever level, our own divinity, Mother Earth, the guides and angels, this community, the community of light workers, doing it in those energetic realms where it is safe, because there is going to be no judgment coming back reflecting at us our insecurity, reflecting at us the experience of unworthiness. It is a way to start getting into that practice so that we can then carry that out into our human interactions, into our relationships, into our friendships, into our work relationships, into our partnerships, into anything, everything, into calling the phone company or the cable company, into every interaction that we have with the person who's checking us out at the store. Every interaction then becomes one where we can step more easily into asking for and accepting help. And so that's a blueprint that I want to just kind of put out there to you. Practice in that way. If you feel called, if you feel willing. And it will help. It will make it easier to ask for what you need in the physical dimension as well. But I want to bring in here another tool that has been one that for me has truly been life-altering. And yeah, I can say that is true for a number of the people, a number of the clients that I have shared it with, a number of the students that I've shared this with. It's not from me originally. I actually connected with it first through something called The Event. It was a group thing that we went into, and it was very intense, and there were a lot of teachings in it. It was also very experiential. I don't think it even exists anymore, but it served me. And one of the ways it served me was it gave me these concepts. And I believe this comes from the field of transpersonal psychology. I actually have never gone and done research on it to try and figure out exactly where it came from or whose idea it was originally. But I found it to be of practical, useful value. And so I've carried it with me, and I've shared it with, quite frankly, innumerable people. And they have found it helpful. So you may have heard this before if you've worked with me for a while. You may not have, but here it is. And it's a good refresher even for those of us who know it, to bring it back to consciousness and play with it. And it's called the drama triangle. Now, one of the reasons I bring this up is that the drama triangle is about taking responsibility for what we are creating in our lives. It's a tool to look at our lives and ask ourselves the question, am I being responsible here for my part of this circumstance, whatever the circumstance might be? And within the event, the thing where I first was exposed to this particular set of ideas, they talked about being responsible as being above the line. And that was their phrase for it. But I like it. It's kind of like you got your head above water. You're above the line. You're making choices rather than being reactionary. And one of the ways, one of the primary tools for being above the line, for taking responsibility, was to ask for what you need. And being willing to do that within your relationships, again, it takes a huge amount of bravery, because we live in a culture that, although there's a lot of people willing to just expose themselves willy-nilly out there, you know, go on Jerry Springer or Maury or one of the so-called reality shows and share everything about their lives, there is a reluctance among many, most people I've ever met anyway, to share their truth and to share their vulnerability. Most of the people going on to those shows are trying to get energy from other people paying attention to them. They're trying to get their value, a sense of worth, out of having other people look at them. And again, it's part of that pattern. It's part of that way of experiencing things, that is seeking the value. Whatever we pay attention to, we send energy to. So there's a degree to which it works to help people feel good if there are a lot of others paying attention to them, but it doesn't truly give value to them. It doesn't help them feel valuable. In fact, it just gets them addicted to attention. Now, back to the basic underlying concepts. If we're being responsible for ourselves, we are going to ask for what we need. Now, if we're not being responsible for ourselves, I'm sure there are others, but there are three primary things that we can look at and say, okay, I'm not being responsible for my piece of this. And that's with particular behaviors. And the first one is blame. If we are blaming someone else for our experience, we're not taking responsibility for our part in it. Period. Because everything that goes on is a co-creation. Yes, that other person may have rammed my car, but quite frankly, if I had left 30 seconds earlier or a minute later, the accident never would have happened because I wouldn't have even been there. I was in that place at that time because of everything that led up to that moment. All of my choices. All of them. And so there's a degree I'm responsible, even if the other person runs the red light, etc. Now, I'm not talking about legal responsibility. I'm talking about co-creative responsibility, which is what matters here, which is what matters in terms of this equation of asking for help, which is what matters in this equation of whether or not we're on the drama triangle. And so blame is the first piece. If you're in blame, if we're in blame, when I'm in blame, I'm not being responsible for my own experiences. That includes blaming myself. If I'm kicking my own ass in the moment, then I'm not there as an empowered co-creator going, okay, I had this experience. What am I going to take out of it? Rather, I'm condemning myself because I didn't create it differently. Well, that doesn't serve any purpose except to reinforce my experience of my own unworthiness. So blame is first. The second one is if I am experiencing resentment. Now, sometimes that also could be categorized as blame. I think there's a bit of a difference there. Blame is the active anger, if you will, side of things. Resentment is the inwardly turned smoldering anger. So there's a different thing going on there. It's the jealousy piece. It's the piece of, ooh, I'm going to hold a grudge against you. But again, it's not allowing or causing us to take responsibility for our pieces of the equation when we're living in resentment. My brother got all the attention. Yeah. I'm going to hold a grudge. I'm not going to treat him well. I'm going to snub him. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Doesn't serve. It's not even about this moment. It's about something that happened in the past. And you're going to carry it forward. It's nursing our own pain. not a happy way to go, and not going to be helpful for stepping into manifesting into the future in a way that serves even better in your life, in a way that is more empowered for you. The third leg, the third piece of the stool, if you will, of the puzzle, is justification. Now, this is something I have been quite frequently guilty of. And it's trying to prove our side of the equation. Why I believe I'm right and you're wrong. Why I believe it's your fault and not my fault. Why I'm looking at this equation and saying, I got screwed here because of you. I was just trying to do this. And in some ways, this is about our intentions as opposed to our actions. Well, I intended this, and it didn't work out that way. But I gave it my all, blah, 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 blah. But that's not saying this is what happened. I take responsibility for it not happening the way I desired it to, for my piece of it. I'm willing to forgive myself for that. And in resentment and blame, I'm willing to forgive you for that. I'm willing to forgive you for your pieces of it. And moving forward. So let's talk a little bit about the drama triangle itself. And again, this is another way to look at it, to know when we are not being responsible for our own actions, when we're not taking responsibility for our own circumstances, which, here's the trick, here's the key, here's the most important part of that. If it's someone else's fault, then I'm stuck here. There's nothing I can do to make a change that will affect these circumstances positively and make my life better. And that's the thing. If we're not being responsible, if we're not claiming our power as co-creators, then we're stuck with whatever we get. Now, the drama triangle, that's the first part of the drama triangle, and that's called victimhood. If you draw a little triangle right in front of you, at one of those points of the triangle, write victimhood. When we are in victimhood, we believe that another person or life or fate or something else is in control of our life. We are not. And we don't have the power to make a change. That's not a very happy place to live. Most people I know go here occasionally, at least at first when there's a triggering circumstance, when something goes as unplanned or the opposite of what was planned or the opposite of what was desired, or it's worse than we hoped for. I know a lot of people who will go into this response. But that's the first response. And as we step into our emotions and claim them and own them, and we allow ourselves to express them and move them through, it can help us to get to the next place where we are owning our responsibility and taking steps to remedy the situation, to change it for the better, which is the ideal, the place that we would choose to go, I believe, all of us eventually, to be able to be consciously creating moment by moment. And so what are the other pieces of the drama triangle? Well, if you're going to have a victim, you have to have someone who is screwing with the victim. And in this particular framework, they called it the persecutor. And that is your mortal enemy, or the enemy of the moment, the one who's giving you all the grief. It's the bad boss. It's the partner who's a mean person. It's the partner who doesn't understand you. It's the children who are always, always mistreating you, disrespecting you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's anyone out there who mistreats you in any way is the persecutor. And without them, we couldn't have our victimhood. So we need to find them. We need to find them. And if you've got that, you've got a victim, you've got a persecutor, what makes good drama theatrically? Well, is to have a rescuer, to have the knight in shining armor come riding in to save the day. The cavalry is going to show up and save the settlers from the Indians. Well, let's look at that for a second. Let's look at that, because that is a wonderful example of the drama triangle. In our Western mythology of the United States, you have the hardy cowboy, the hardy settler, and they're out there, and they represent all that is good and right, and they are moving around. Yes, they are, exactly. You believe that? No. It's part of the myth. But they get out there, and then the Indians are the persecutors, and they're going to come in, and they're going to victimize the settlers. They're going to victimize the ranchers and the cowboys and the farmers, and they're creating all the problems. And so the government, the cavalry, has to step in and save the victims, who are the white settlers, from their persecutors, who are the Indians. Well, the funny thing about the drama triangle is that when you're on the drama triangle, you're going to bounce around. It all depends upon perspective. From the native's perspective, certainly many of the tribes, until the whites mistreated them, were wary, perhaps, of the white settlers, but they weren't antagonistic. They weren't just massacring people. And from their perspective, we invaded their land. We brought diseases they didn't have before, sometimes on purpose, as in when the traders would give them blankets with smallpox in them and decimate populations. From the Native Americans' perspective, they were the victims. The whites were the persecutors. The settlers were the persecutors. We were coming in. They were coming in, taking the land. And there was no rescuer. There were just more persecutors. The cavalry would come in. That was a whole other level of persecutor, because they could enforce things that the settlers couldn't necessarily do. It's all from the perspective. And that's the thing about the drama triangle. There is not necessarily responsibility being taken. I'm not saying that there aren't times when there is some truth in the fact that someone else is mistreating you. That's not what I'm saying. It happens. But what I'm saying is they are doing that from an energetic place, reflecting back to you a degree of your feeling of unworthiness, to give you an opportunity to step up into a greater degree of experiencing your worthiness by doing another one of the actions that they talked about in the event, to take care of yourself. One is asking for what you need. One piece of asking for what you need is setting boundaries. If someone is mistreating you, then you ask them to stop. If they refuse, if they continue, then you tell them to stop. If they refuse, if they continue, then you tell them more loudly to stop. You set the boundaries at the level that you need to for them to hear it. If they are being physically violent with you, well, you may need to have physical violence in return, whether it's you or the police coming in. But this is about changing the viewpoint that persecutor is just screwing with us. From their perspective, mentally, they may be. They may be doing it just because it makes them feel a little better to make you feel worse. In most cases, especially with the relationships closest to us, if we are willing to set our boundaries, others ultimately will be willing to change their behaviors. But the ultimate boundary that we do have the right to set, once we reach adulthood at least and are in charge of our own choices, the ultimate boundary to set is, I can't have you in my life anymore. And we have that right. Now, Why did I go here through all the drama triangle and everything? Because this is part of the patterns that most of us are running that get us trapped in the place where we don't feel like we can ask for what we need. And at the core of it all, the fear of asking for what we need from others is the fear that they'll say no. And thereby reflect back to us that they don't think we're worthy of their help. When in fact, there could be 1,000 reasons for people to say no. One of my greatest lessons, and if you listen to the show where I talked about my first trip to Egypt, I think I talked about this. One of my greatest lessons ever was when I knew I needed to go to Egypt and I knew I did not have the money for it, and I asked one of my clients, who was also a friend, if I could borrow it from her. I wasn't asking for a gift, and she needed to think about it because she had lots of, well, she didn't tell me this at first. She told me this when she told me no. When she told me no, her reasoning was that she had a lot of people who were only in her life for her money and what they could get from her. And so she needed to know what, where I was coming from. Why was she a part of my life? But in between my asking and the next day when she gave me the answer, I spent some time with another friend who helped me to see that what was most important was not whether she said yes, but it was that I was willing to step up and ask for what I needed. Because in asking her, I was not just asking her, I was asking the universe. Which brings us back around to where we started. By practicing with directly asking spirit in whatever level, our own divinity, Mother Earth, the guides and angels, the community of the show, the community of light workers, etc. By asking there, we're opening to have a better sense of trust in our power to ask in the physical dimension. But when we ask in the physical dimension of other people, we are still asking spirit. And so even though she said no to me, she didn't give me the money, she wouldn't loan it to me, that money came and I went on that trip and my life changed forever. But it was one of the scariest things I've ever done. It took me a couple of days after I received the guidance to ask her to actually make the call and to do it. Because I was scared to death that this person was going to tell me not only to piss off, but be out of my life. And at that point in time, I needed every client I had. It was definitely a hand-to-mouth time in my life. And I didn't want to ruin the friendship that we had either. And so it scared me to death, almost petrified me. I almost didn't do it. But in doing it, in being willing to step up and ask for what I needed, stepping out of my fear, stepping through it, breathing into it, letting it go, whatever it took, it changed my life forever. And I've never forgotten that, and I've used that in other moments when I needed to ask a difficult thing, whether it was setting a boundary or whether it was asking for something I needed directly to receive. And it's never failed to be empowering, even if the direct answer in the moment was no, I can't do that for you, I won't do that for you. Doesn't matter what their reason is. And so I just want to offer that. And I think it's a wonderful tool. And when we can recognize, oh my God, I'm in my victimhood and I'm turning you into my persecutor and I'm looking for you to rescue me. And when we can breathe into that and go, okay, I'm going to choose to take responsibility for being here in this circumstance because obviously I co-created it. I got this job. I'm in this relationship. I chose my family, et cetera, et cetera. I'm here because of things that I did. And so I can move through this, I can move forward out of this by choices I'm going to make now. And when we breathe into that, that's another level of bringing our mastery up and exposing it in our own experience, which is what matters most, because that's where it starts. Until we experience our mastery, we can't express it. Until we experience our mastery, we can't share it. We can't expose it. We can't let it out. And so this, again, is another way to work with that, to lift that energy within ourselves and move forward with it. And it really does. It doesn't instantly change everything, but it's a path. It's a tool that we can use to take the next step, and especially a tool that we can use to take the next step when things are not going our way, when they're not how we want them to be, which seems to be the most important time, because that's when we have the opportunity to look at some of our deeper, darker secrets, some of the things that we are really holding on to about our unworthiness. And because they're at the surface, it's easier to let them go. It's easier to heal them in those circumstances. So, I think that's enough of me for this moment. It's transformation time, time to bring in whatever master we have. I do want to make one brief announcement for those of you listening. Yes, there is a gateway this month. It is tomorrow evening. I will be sending the email out later today. I do apologize for not having it out there sooner, but that's the way life is lately. So anyway, it is tomorrow night. Obviously, you can do it through the recording. You can do it in person. You can do it through the teleconference. I'd love to have you join us if you feel called. The gateways that are going to be opened, tomorrow is the full moon. The gateway we're opening for the full moon, I believe, is the gateway of focus. And the equinox is coming up here very soon, so we're opening up a gateway in conjunction with the equinox energies, and that is the gateway of completion. And so if you could use more focus in your life, if you could use a little more empowerment in being able to complete what you started, this would be a wonderful, wonderful event for you. Starts at 7:30 Eastern time tomorrow evening. And as I said, you can contact me by email, by phone. I didn't say that yet. But I will get the full information up on the website and out via email later on today. So anyway, into the channeling. And as always, I would ask you to allow your breathing to deepen a little bit while I do the toning and bring in our guest being. Hello, dear ones. This is Archangel Michael, come to be with you today. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And so you are opening, connecting with the energy of support. You are opening, connecting with the energy of strength and empowerment. And so we would come back in here today to give you a reminder to ask, not just for our help, but for our presence. Ask to experience our energies more fully. And you do not need to ask for that as something that is coming toward you. In other words, as something that is outside of you that you're going to connect with and reach out and shake our hand. What we would suggest that you do instead is ask for our presence to merge with you, so that you are experiencing us from the inside out, so that you are experiencing our presence, our strength within you which enables you to claim more of that experience within you, because that's where our energy will be. So we would offer you this right now. Allow yourself to ask for, to open for our presence to be within you, and allow yourself to breathe deeply into our presence and open as fully as you are willing, as fully as you are able in this moment, in this second, if you will. Allow us to expand. And a couple of places to most strongly focus, perhaps, to connect with these energies that we are. One would be the spine, because it is the core structure on which your whole body is built. Not that other pieces are irreplaceable or less replaceable or more replaceable, but this is the core of the messages that go around your entire body and allow you to function in the physical dimension. And what might be called the small of the back. Once upon a time, it used to be called the loins, if you will. Gird your loins. What does that mean? It means gather your strength. It means put on your weapons. It means you're getting ready to go out in strength and courage to express. And so allow yourselves, especially in the low back, the small of the back, the loins, and up the spine, to connect with our presence, to breathe into our presence, to breathe our presence into you. And imagine yourself standing tall. Some would say standing proud, if you will. But it's not about arrogance. It is about awareness. Standing in your divinity. That's what we would say. Stand in your divinity. Allow your divinity to come forth. Allow the strength of divinity to express within you and through you. And we can open that with you. We can help you to discover this, to expand it, until you walk in it most all of the time. So, looking good, dear ones. Looking good. We are always with you. And the more you remember to ask for our presence, the more we can give to you, and the more we will gladly give to you. Much love to you, dear ones, now and always. Namaste. Okay, thank you, Michael. And Doug, go ahead and start those chimes. And I want to thank all of you for helping to co-create this with me here today. To co-create this time together, to co-create the messaging, to co-create the channeling. And I want to thank you as well for all of that feedback that I have received from you while I've been doing the show, because it all does feed into the creation of this as well. So keep it coming. Thank you, thank you, thank you in advance for any pieces that you will be sending to me. Let me know what you think of this show. Let me know what you'd like to hear on the show, future topics, future guests. Next week, I do believe I have a guest coming in. I need to get back in touch with him. But if not, I think I'll find somebody else to fill those shoes. So we should have a guest next week. And, well, I always, always look forward to joining you out there in the truth within. Remember, you never know where this show will go. I certainly don't. And I wish you a wonderful week of many, many blessings and much receiving of love and support. Namaste, my friends.